in a certain sense. So I take it in that way. I take it in that way. You know, certainly they're partially all cognizant, in that they are definitely cognizant of all the living entities in the material, in their particular universe. So they're definitely partially all cognizant in terms of their specific parameters. Changeless. Well, they're partially changeless because, you know, by the time we have gone from being 1 day old to the point where at perhaps 70 or 80 years, by the law of averages at least, we may then leave our what will be a totally decrepit and wiped out body. If we were to, you know, have had a look at Lord Brahma on day one, and then have a look at Lord Brahma on our last day, then we would not be able to discern a change. Because for him, it's been just a few seconds. Yeah. So no discernible change will have occurred. Actually, some change will have occurred, but it won't be discernible. So in that sense, he's partially changeless. In a certain, you know, it's a very achintya bade abade type of understanding. So I take it like that. They partially possess all mystic powers. Well, they do. They have tremendous mystic powers. They have all of them, but not completely. Yeah. That's my understanding. Is it correct to assume that Krishna has cognizance over all universes? Definitely. And every atom within them. Yeah? No. Brahma and Shiva are conscious within their own universes. Yeah. They're very conscious. You know, they're very high living entities. Directly can mean through his energies. Yeah. He is expanded through his energies, and he deputes his potency to his energies. So there's a sense of difference there. Yeah. So in that sense, it could be said directly and indirectly. Yeah. So please, if you haven't read verse 55 in the purport, please read it. It's a little involved. It's very interesting, though. And then 56, we'll also discuss tomorrow, verse 56. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sitaram Lakshman Prabhu. Well, sorry about the weather. What can we do? It's the material world. Well, it's Vrindavan Dham, so I guess it's a transcendental test. Today we are going to go on to text 55. 53 was discussing how the Supreme Personality of Godhead is supplying the potency which helps people to change, or allows people to change their positions. Then 54 explained how he is monitoring the karma of the non-devotees in a very fair way, but he's giving special mercy to the devotees, giving karma to the non-devotees very fairly, and giving special mercy to the devotees. Samoham sarvabhuteshu na me dveshosti na priyaha ye bhajanti tamam bhaktya mai te teshu chapyaham. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that I am not envious of anyone. No one is particularly dear to me. I am equal to all, but one who renders service unto me in devotion as a friend is in me, and I'm also a friend to him. So Krishna gives special mercy to the devotees. Then text 55 is, in a nutshell, really, it is quite in a nutshell, explaining some important parts of devotional service. Let us recite the verse responsively. Text 55. Yam krodha kama sahaja pranayadi bhiti. Vatsalya moha guru gaurava sevya bhavai. Sanchintya tasya sadrishim tanuma purete. Govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, the meditators of whom, by meditating upon him under the sway of wrath, amorous passion, natural friendly love, fear, parental affection, delusion, reverence, and willing service, attain to bodily forms befitting the nature of their contemplation. So this verse is particularly was referring to people who became absorbed in remembering Krishna in different ways, on different grounds. Everything from the highest level of pure love down to hatred or fear. But one way or another, different people who were in different conditions, they became totally absorbed in Krishna to the complete exclusion of anything else. And as results of being absorbed in Krishna, or thinking of Krishna so extremely intently, but in different ways, then they achieved different goals or different results in terms of the specific natures of their contemplations. So before getting into this, more than anything, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta in the purport, he explains there are two forms of, or in a sense, two levels of devotional service. And they are mentioned right up at the beginning there of the purport. So one is a form of devotional service which is based on deference to regulation. In other words, one is willing to defer to, or one is willing to accept rules and regulations of devotional service. That is the idea. And one then renders devotional service in terms of the rules and regulations. Do this, don't do that. Like this. In other words, one doesn't really have a taste for it, but understanding that it's a very worthwhile thing, one does it. One renders devotional service, and despite the fact that sometimes one may not want to do something which one is meant to do in devotional service, but despite not wanting to do it, one will do it because one has agreed to accept the rules. And sometimes when one wants to do something which is against devotional service, one will not do it, understanding that it's not good for one's devotional service. Then after some time, one may come to the second level where your devotion is, it embodies some real feeling to serve. One really wants to serve very strongly. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta goes on to talk about these two, and mainly the second type. As far as the first type, where one is governed by rules and regulations, he says that this bhakti, well, first of all, bhakti is aroused by following the rules with a little faith, at least enough faith to follow the rules. So this bhakti is of the nature of loyalty to the scriptural regulations, and it continues to be operative as long as the corresponding natural feeling is not roused. But if a person loves Krishna out of natural tendency, there is the principle of rag, which is no other than a strong desire to serve, and which turns into bhava or substantive feeling. So rag, literally rag means attachment. In the beginning, you're not attached to Krishna, but you understand you should perform devotional service. So you're willing to do what is necessary, follow the rules and regulations. But after some time, you become a little purified. So a natural attraction from within you arises that you want to serve. Thank you for braving the storm. I saw it coming actually half an hour or more before the class, so I quickly ran over. Yeah. So in the beginning, one isn't so inclined to serve, but one does it understanding it's the right thing. But then when one becomes purified, then the natural attraction which exists within the heart for Krishna and for serving Krishna, it starts to manifest. And it manifests in the form, at least initially, of a real enthusiasm to serve, a real attachment to Krishna, a real attachment to serving. Srila Prabhupada talks about this in the second chapter of Nectar of Devotion. It's called Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti. It is really the very beginning stages of that. Prabhupada explains there that initially, under the rules and regulations, you may get up in the morning even though you don't want to and do your service, even though sometimes you might prefer to go to the beach, but you will do your service because you know I really should do it. But then when you become a little purified, then instead of not wanting to get up in the morning when the alarm clock rings, but you'll be happy that now I can get up, I don't have to sleep any longer. How nice. And how nice it will be to come to that level. So the basic idea is like that. That one is thinking, how will I serve today? How will we decorate the deity? And one is making so many plans and other interests, material interests, which may have been there previously, but one is thinking, no. What do I want those for? Let me serve. So this is based on rag. Rag means this attachment to Krishna which naturally arises in the heart. And then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says that as one becomes further advanced by enthusiastically serving and that natural tendency to serve Krishna is coming out more and more and more, as the heart becomes more purified and the soul becomes more uncovered, then it turns into bhava, or substantive feeling. Bhava, in this sense, substantive feeling means a particular type of attraction to Krishna, in terms of one of the rasas. One's rasa, we've mentioned this some days ago, whatever one's rasa is with Krishna, conjugal, parental, friendly, servitude, neutrality, and mixed with perhaps some of the seven secondary rasas like chivalry, compassion, ghastliness, and so on. So whatever it is, that is already there within the heart. that is an integral part of our eternal nature as spiritual persons. So as one advances through this enthusiastic service, attached to Krishna more and more, the heart becoming purified, then what is the nature of one's specific relationship with Krishna will gradually manifest. And this is what he means by it turns into bhava, or substantive feeling. It takes a real form in terms of a real relationship, not just the general idea that let me serve in whatever way, but it becomes a specific tendency to serve in a specific way in terms of one's eternal relationship. And then when that substantive feeling is aroused, when that particular inclination to serve Krishna in one of the rasas is aroused, then the devotee becomes an object of mercy for Krishna. Not that you don't get any mercy up until that point, but the thing is that Krishna at that point pours his mercy on your head and you just drown. And that's it. Material life, goodbye. One will certainly get mercy before that, even in the very early stages, but it becomes like a total inundation on that level. So then, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, in terms of the verse, goes on to discuss the particular types of feelings mentioned in the verse. Some of them we can recognize as being different of these specific rasas. Others we may wonder, what do they have to do with devotional service? Like wrath, anger. How can you have a loving relationship with Krishna in which you hate him? Well, you can't actually. But amorous passion, oh yes, that means the gopis. Natural friendly love, of course, like the cowherd boys. Fear, not really. Parental affection, of course, Mother Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj. Delusion, how could that be? Not really. Reverence means like neutrality. Or willing service means dasyaras. So people become attached to Krishna in all these different ways. And this is the principle of rag. As we said, rag means attachment. And these people may become so attached to Krishna in these different moods that it excludes any other conception of Krishna. So the gopis, they love Krishna so much in the conjugal way, they forget he's God. That becomes excluded. So, anyway, these devotees like the gopis and Nanda Maharaj, or at least people who follow in their footsteps, they go to Goloka, or they go to wherever they're due to go, into their eternal relationship with Krishna. But what about people who hate Krishna? Can you think of an example of someone famous who hated Krishna to the point he just could never forget Krishna, even he never forgot Krishna? Shishupal is the example of hatred. He was, of course, in his previous life, Ravana. So, anyway, these devotees like the gopis and Nanda Maharaj, or at least people who follow in their footsteps, they go to Goloka, or they go to wherever they're due to go, into their eternal relationship with Krishna. But what about people who hate Krishna? Can you think of an example of someone famous who hated Krishna to the point he just could never forget Krishna, even he never forgot Krishna? Shishupal is the example of hatred. He was, of course, in his previous life, Ravana. And prior to that, Hiranyakashipu. So he certainly disliked Krishna. And just like we heard about Lord Brahma, his serving, his creative tendency arose in him in this life as Lord Brahma, because that was how he was in the previous life. So because in the previous life, Shishupal as Ravana had hated Krishna, so in this life as Shishupal, he hated Krishna with a vengeance, and it showed itself right from the very first day or days. He was born almost at the same time as Krishna. He is a cousin of Krishna, and he was lying there in his little cradle or somewhere, maybe in his mother's arms, when one of the relatives said that, oh, did you hear that our other relatives, such and such, they also had a baby, and the baby's name is Krishna. So when Shishupal heard that, even though he was only about 1 or 2 days old, he hit the roof. I think he went through the roof. He went into a total berserk tantrum, which lasted for days. So from that day on, until the day he died, he never forgot Krishna in a mood of hatred. If someone asked him, what are you doing today? He would say, today I hate Krishna. If someone asked him, you know, what do you think about this, anything? He would say, well, I think I hate Krishna, or something like that. He never, ever thought of anything other than Krishna. He never spoke of anything other than Krishna, but in a mood of hatred. And then fear. Some of you suggested Kamsa for hatred, but actually Kamsa is the person who feared Krishna. When is he coming to kill me? Oh my God, is he just around the corner? Will he come at night? Oh my Lord. He was in a total state of fear, to the point he couldn't forget Krishna, even though he tried. Can you imagine that? We forget Krishna even though we try not to forget him sometimes. But he tried to forget Krishna and he couldn't. In fact, it just drove him to the point of practically madness. This voice in his head was just saying, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. So he was going a little nutty. And then delusion. Can you think about that? Who might that be? It's the Brahmins, yeah. Actually, they're referred to in the purport even, if I remember correctly. Are they referred to in the purport? I think so. What does it say? Where is it? Something about pantheistic. Where is it? 101. Oh. Oh yeah, delusion in the pundits of the pantheistic school. Yeah. So, anyway, they also became attached to Krishna. Then the devotees became attached to Krishna in terms of love, and love which manifest in specific forms. So all these people attain different destinations. Those who love Krishna, those who are overwhelmingly attached to Krishna in the mood of conjugal love, they became gopis or queens of Krishna and so on for all the different devotees in the different moods. And where did Shishupal go and Kamsa? They went to the Brahmajyoti. And the pundits, the Brahmins, they were on the way there, but their wives helped them. Anyway, they didn't quite get it together, the pundits. Yeah, they remained mixed, even though their wives became pure. They weren't willing to display their love for Krishna out of fear of being harassed by Kamsa. So they continued on with their previous normal practices. So like this, people who meditate on Krishna and become totally absorbed in meditating on Krishna in different ways, attain different goals in terms of their different meditations. Shishupal and Kamsa went to the Brahma Jyoti. Even though they remembered Krishna always, which is one of the principles of Krishna consciousness. In other words, they were Krishna conscious. They were very conscious of Krishna, but in a mood of fear, not a devotional mood. So through remembering Krishna, their minds were purified. Their minds became spiritualized, so they achieved a spiritual goal. But because they hated Krishna, there was no bhakti, so they didn't achieve his association in one of the spiritual planets. So where could you go where you can be spiritual but not have a relationship with Krishna? There's only one place. It's the Brahma Jyoti. So that's where they went. Let us go on to text 56. Now, this is a very beautiful verse. I'm very fond of this. Very nice verse. We have just now concluded the Govindam Adi Purusham verses. And this verse, actually this verse is the last verse spoken by Lord Brahma. From just now, Krishna is going to start talking, replying, responding to Lord Brahma, having heard these wonderful prayers. So here in 56, Brahma is summing up his realizations of Goloka Vrindavan. I worship that transcendental seat known as Sweta Dweep, whereas loving consorts, the Lakshmis and their unalloyed spiritual essence, practice the amorous service of the Supreme Lord Krishna as their only lover, where every tree is a transcendental purpose tree, where the soil is the purpose gem, all water is nectar, every word is a song, every gate, every step is a dance, the flute is the favorite attendant, effulgence is full of transcendental bliss, and the supreme spiritual entities are all enjoyable and tasty. Where numberless milk cows always emit transcendental oceans of milk, where there is eternal existence of transcendental time, whose ever present and without past or future, and hence is not subject to the quality of passing away, even for the space of half a moment. That realm is known as Goloka, only to a very few self-realized souls in this world. Isn't that a nice description? Such a nice description. Such a beautiful place. It would be nice to go there. We should try to go there. There are many nice points that can be made here. And different of our acharyas have made different nice points. Jiva Goswami in Krishna Sandarbha, and also to some extent in his Brahma Samhita commentary, makes some nice points. Some of you may have heard them before. All water is nectar, just like the ordinary water that comes out of the tap or that was falling from the sky just a little while ago. Up there in Goloka Vrindavan, all the ordinary water tastes like nectar. Jiva Goswami says, you can just imagine nectar. So thick, it's like honey, that when you turn it, the container, upside down, it doesn't just go splosh like water, but it just oozes out like honey. And having every conceivable taste. So whatever taste you like, you'll find it there. And if someone else has another taste, some other flavor they like, they'll find that there. So this is nectar, topmost drink. So in Goloka Vrindavan, all the ordinary water that comes out of the tap tastes like nectar. So Jiva Goswami raises the question that if all the ordinary water tastes like nectar, like our nectar on this planet, then what does their nectar